Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to Stone Cold Shows. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Palillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, the draft slots are set. So Dana Brown, do your thing. Speaking of Brown doing his thing, while we wait on word of the Astros' first substantive move of the offseason, a few names have risen to the top from MLB insiders, including interest in one of the Astros' infielders that's raising some eyebrows from fans and media. We'll discuss. Before all that, Charlie, Josh, welcome in. The draft order is set for the 2026 draft, and Houston will pick 17th and 28th. Given the state of the team's farm system, it would seem like there is increased importance on Dana Brown getting those picks right, especially considering that both he and Joe Espada are entering the final year of their respective deals, but that's more in the distant future. In the more imminent future, per Chandler Rome of The Athletic, the Astros are interested in Rays Shane Boz. Now, to be clear, sources say that the Rays are unlikely to move Boz, but the Astros and Rays have at least had discussions of framework of a potential trade. Now, Boz is 26, a righty. He's under team control for three more seasons. He was a highly rated prospect before debuting in 2021, underwent TJ in 2022, posted a 4.87 ERA across 166 and a third innings in 2025, which was his first full season back from injury. Jake Meyers is obviously a name that's been bandied about in all these trades. It's thought to be that he would be a potential piece at the center of that trade. And reportedly, the Rays have interest in Astros prospect Anderson Brito, who is currently pitching in high A. Charlie, this underscores your thoughts about how you expect the Astros to operate this offseason, which is very measured, if not frugal. What are your thoughts on Boz and whether that sort of move would be worth a Jake Meyers plus others?
I wouldn't go, ew, if that was the guts of the trade. Brito's interesting. He's a little guy who can throw the heck out of the ball. And if you have a very vivid imagination, you can see very young Pedro Martinez, just in terms of his size. And wow, he throws hard for a little guy. But he's not thought to be any sort of super elite prospect. Boz grew up in Tomball, graduated from a private school up there, was a first round draft pick, and has had an injury laden history. Kind of like running backs coming back from an ACL, kind of the first year as your work, your year up to speed. And Boz made 31 starts for the Rays. A 4.87 ERA isn't going to get anybody tingly if you're trading for him. But the hope would be that was his reacclimating, and hey, he stayed healthy all year. The Astros now have been linked to multiple second-tier starting pitcher types in one Jake Meyers rumbled deal or another. There is a market for Jake, but it's going to be a mid-market. He's about to turn 30 years old, and he was good before the calf stuff, but no one was confusing him with an elite all-around player. And what is his real upside? He only hit three home runs. But Boz, at least off his 2025 performance, would meet the definition of innings eating back of the rotation starter. Mike Burrows of the Pirates, similarly, who's also undergone Tommy John surgery. The best talent the Astros have been at least linked to on a Meyers swap is Chris Bubich of the Royals, who made the All-Star team this past season. Yeah, but then had his season end in late July with a sore rotator cuff. Oh, yeah, he had Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago. Once you're a couple seasons removed, though, from Tommy John, I don't sweat that. I mean, it's almost becoming mandatory for these hard-throwing guys, spin from when they're in the minor leagues, that you're going to have it sooner or later. You hope you just don't have to have it again once you acquire a guy. So if it's Myers and an okay pitching prospect for one of those pitchers, all right. But if that's the big acquisition of the offseason, the Astros net as a negative for their offseason because none of those guys project to give you 190 innings at what Framber Valdez did last season, including Framber's six-week coma.
It's obvious to me why they like him. There are some similarities to the type of pitchers they covet. A guy that throws hard with a breaking ball. Kikuchi is an example. They've brought plenty of these guys in. The 4.87 ERA last season, it's not going to excite you, but they're trying to replace Framber Valdez, and his ground ball percentage is very good. So that makes a lot of sense that they like him. High velo, as I mentioned. Now, his expected ERA last year was actually 3.85. So perhaps he got a little bit unlucky, which pushed him up to the 4.87 ERA. And remember, Kikuchi's ERA was well into the fours. And when they traded for him, we're like, ooh, wow. I think they see some similarities and maybe they can get the same results. Also, for Boz, the expected batting average, 232, also really good. The fastball is elite. And the other thing that checks all the boxes for the Astros, more strikeouts than innings pitched. He's got that going on too. So I understand why they would want him, and he's controllable for a few years. It makes all the sense in the world, but they still have other holes to fill, and just bringing him in, there's still other work to be done. But if they make this move, I'd be fine with it. This is the type of guy that they could turn around and they feel like they can take the strengths from certain pitchers and amp up their level of play. And I don't doubt that they could do it with him.
You know, Boz would be stoked to get to come pitch for his hometown team. The Astros really like that he'd be cheap. First year salary arbitration eligible. Burrows, the Pirates guy, won't even be arbitration eligible until at least 2028, probably 2029, unless the rules change in the next CBA. Bubich, meanwhile, has been the best major league pitcher of the lot. How does that impact the trade? Bubich also a left-handed pitcher. If the Astros are thinking, well, as one guy to replace Framber, we're getting a lefty who had at least a half season's worth of all-star credentials. I'm very mixed. On the one hand, concerned that is this all they're going to do? They're $20 million and change. And by change, I mean 23, maybe as much as $24 million below the first tax threshold. So if you're taking on a pitcher who's making no more than, say, $3 million in Boz, Burrows won't even be making $1 million, well, you still have $20 million left. And so whether it's a move for another more substantial pitcher or maybe an outfield bat, they still have that backup catcher to address. But if they make moves that are trimming more payroll when they're already more than $20 million below, that will crack the door to me to allow for complaints of people. Hey, why are they starting to go a little bit on the cheap when I've been saying to the contrary? They were top eight in payroll. They're restructuring the payroll. But if you're, say, moving off $9 million of another player on your roster and trading for a pitcher who's going to make three, check the math. That's whittling $6 million off the payroll.
Well, it could be they're looking to peel away $16 million for Verlander, which we keep talking about, because we all assume maybe he'd take 12, but JV's not about taking pay cuts. He made 15 last year. I bet he's going to want a slight raise.
Yeah, and you also have to wonder how much the impending work stoppage is influencing Jim Crane right now. I mean, obviously, the salary implications and the CBT threshold implications are there as well. But you do have to wonder if Jim Crane wants to maybe pump the brakes a little bit and see what the world looks like after the dust clears after a new CBA. Charlie, you said about Boz, how TJ is almost a rite of passage and usually you're fine after you have it. That hasn't necessarily been the case with Houston in their recent experience, which led to the parting of Jeremiah Randall as head athletic trainer. Now, we got news this week that the Astros have promoted Eric Velasquez to head athletic trainer now. And Dana Brown said that they've done a full audit of their return to play policies. So I have to ask you this. Does it make you guys feel better that they say they have addressed it? Or do you guys have a little bit of apprehension that people that broke it claim that they fixed it and further promoted from within to replace Randall?
Well, I'll leave the analogy that Josh made before we fired up the big recording machine to Josh. I'm not going to sweat it. I mean, it's fair to say, well, what you're promoting from within. I mean, I doubt the new guy behind his predecessor's back was saying, well, what a quack. He doesn't know what he's doing. What is he having Jake Myers run out to center field for? You just hope that they've evaluated, if not overhauled, many of their procedures. And some of this stuff goes above team trainer, you know, right, their medical partners and who does the nitty gritty work of MRIs and x-rays and whatever high tech medical stuff can be done. All we know is their health track record in 2025 and really over the last couple of years on multiple fronts has been lousy. You just hope it was a spate of really bad luck more than straight up negligence and incompetence.
Yeah, this is something we kicked around on the A-team this week, was that it reminded us of the Texans promoting their assistant offensive line coach after the offensive line was terrible and they had to fire the offensive line coach. Why don't teams try and get more of these people out of there? But to Charlie's point, this may have come from above, and who knows? Maybe he's the one that had the genius idea that maybe we should DH Yordan instead of having him run around in the left field with a metal scoreboard and chronic hand problems.
Which now we're seeing there's some contradictions on that front as well. And I will say this about Randall. It's largely thought, at least there's rumblings, that Randall was a fall guy for decisions that were made above his head. Obviously, we don't have any inside information on that necessarily, so we'll leave that to speculation. But
okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
As we're talking about potential trades, one of the interesting or ongoing themes of the offseason is this infield surplus for Houston. And an interesting tidbit that came from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic was that the Red Sox, who are currently in pursuit of re-signing Alex Bregman, have expressed interest in rounding out their infield with Astros third baseman Isak Paredes. Now, Paredes is under team control for two more seasons and is projected to make around $9 million in 2026. Now, it's presumed that if he were to go to Boston, that their interest in him would likely be an insurance policy should they not be able to re-sign Alex Bregman at third. Or if they are successful in retaining Alex Bregman at third, then they move Isak over to first, which is interesting because that's where we see him should things play out in Houston the way they are currently. Houston has interest in some of Boston's players. They've got Peyton Tolle and Connelly Early, who are two young lefties. So Houston would have interest there, and that would fill a need. But and I know they are desperate for pitching, and I know that there is that logjam in the infield, but Charlie, isn't dealing Paredes just kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul on this team?
This would be very concerning. And without another major move, you're moving $9 million of Paredes. Hey, Tolle and Early are both quality left-handed prospects, but they're prospects. They both got a taste late in the season. Tolle, after a good first four or five innings, he wound up not succeeding, which isn't troubling. He's 23 years old. Early, meanwhile, pitched pretty well and wound up pitching and losing the decisive game of the wildcard series to the Yankees as the Red Sox ran out of other options. So either of those guys would immediately become the Astros' number one pitching prospect. But Paredes, for the time that he played, take your pick between he and Jeremy Peña, the two best guys in the Astros lineup last season. And they would be going with a very old infield. The right side, 35-year-old Walker. Altuve turns 36 in May. Neither guy was a good player in 2025. You generally don't make great leaps forward as you're moving through your mid-30s. Peña, of course, just give him health, and I don't know that he'll hit almost 300 again and do what he did before tailing off once he returned from the injury, but he's a good ball player. Correa, to me, offensively, is a huge concern. You take out his first 10 games after the reunion with the Astros, Correa wasn't good. He was terrible with the Twins the first half of the season. He's 31 years old. Durability questions with him. So unless the Astros have concern with Paredes, soft tissue stuff, he really mangled that hamstring. He's thick of body. If they're not worried about that being a recurrent injury or that type of injury for him, under control for two more years, several years younger than all but Peña in that infield, a guy who takes pitches and draws walks, a much better offensive player than Correa or Altuve last year. In fact, missing a third of the season injured. Paredes had a higher WAR than Correa and Altuve did playing a whole season, and obviously higher than Walker. So without another offensive move attached, so you're going to move Myers, you're going to move Paredes, and you're saying, oh yeah, you're going to get good Correa, when year to year, you don't know. And he's now in his 30s. Altuve, the worst year in over a decade. He's getting ready to turn 36. And oh yeah, now he's going to be your almost everyday second baseman again. And in center field, forget what Joe Espada had to say at the winter meetings, feeling really good about Zach Cole and Jacob Melton. I mean, I guess that's the epitaph on Myers, that he's a goner if Espada's trying to talk up Cole and Melton. I wanted to read this one quote because I was like, what? Espada, we're going to give them a longer look in spring training, meaning Cole and Melton. I think not only they showed that they could play at our level, but they did it in an environment where we were in the middle of a playoff hunt, and they were able to handle that very well. I'll work with that on Cole and his 47 at-bats. Couple real long home runs. Jacob Melton showed nothing. Nothing. 11 for 70. 29 strikeouts. Nothing. Completely overmatched in the batter's box, which doesn't mean that he can't become quasi-competent, but he's shown nothing to this point. He's 25 years old, as is Cole for that matter. But to circle back, yes, trading Paredes is making their lineup worse for a pitcher you're hoping has a good rookie season with you.
Make no mistake about it. This offense is much, much worse if you trade Paredes for just pitching. This makes zero sense to me. And as an Astros fan, you're going to give the Red Sox Bregman and then Paredes? Like, what are we talking about here? I get it why the Red Sox want him. Green Monster. Crawford boxes. That's why he makes so much sense for the Astros, too. I don't want to see him go anywhere. He's one of the guys that can take some pitches and work a walk and spit on some pitches in the dirt. He is exactly what this lineup needed. That's why they traded for him last year. They knew they needed this. So if they're going to turn around and deal him for pitching, just pitching, that makes zero sense to me. I can't do it. And then I'm also seeing Joe Espada saying that Paredes can play some second base, too. I mean, if you really thought he could really play some good second base and Altuve's a good left fielder, why wouldn't that be the answer if you're insisting on Yordan being your DH? Clearly, they don't feel good about either one of those things, or that's what they would roll with as their starters. So this makes no sense to me. And look, what does make sense is that nobody wants Christian Walker. Nobody wants to pay him $20 million a year. I get it. But if you're going to deal Paredes, you better be getting so much back that it's pitching. It's a great offensive player that can start, a ball player that can fit your ballpark. I just can't see them doing this. Like Charlie hit with Cole, he started 13 games for the Astros in the outfield, only three in center field. Now, he did start 53 in double A, but that's double A. So I don't know if that's the answer there. But as far as Paredes, it's a problem if they move him for something that's not spectacular in the eyes of Astros fans. And I get it. They're fans. They're going to be there anyway, and you can't make your decisions based on what the fans are going to do. But he's pretty much your best hitter last year, him and Peña. You can't just trade him away for pitching prospects.
This goes back to taking on 3 years, $66 million more of Carlos Correa being a real problem because it displaced Paredes. And there is no reason to expect that Correa is going to be a really good player the next 3 years. He had put together 3 good years in a row since his first 3 years in the majors. And really, that was half a season, his rookie season, and then a great 2017 before he got hurt and missed a third of the season, and 2016, a good season in between. Look, if I'm talking to the Red Sox, I'm saying Jaron Duran for Isak Paredes straight up. And there's the Astros' good left-handed hitting major league outfielder who could play center field or right field if Cam Smith is not going to be up for holding a portion of the job. But this deal, while getting a real quality pitching prospect back, would be trading a $9 million player for someone who won't be making $900,000. So there better be something else adding more bona fide major league talent. And again, we're speaking in the realm of the hypothetical if there are legs to Paredes for a Toley or an Early.
The concerning part for me is when you're talking about trading for players who would immediately become the team's top pitching prospect. We kind of saw that last year with the Tucker trade. Cam Smith became Houston's number one prospect. And while he broke out in that first half, that by the second half of the season, he was unplayable. And that's not to say that Smith is a bust, but it reinforces, Charlie, what you always say, which is that prospects are about everything that they haven't done yet. Now, getting back to that contradiction of Brown saying that Yordan will be playing more outfield, left field, and then Espada saying Yordan's going to be playing more DH.
Do these guys talk?
It does beg the question for sure. But I want to ask you guys this. I mean, considering the difficult situation that Houston's in with needing people who are productive at the plate versus the abundance of people that they have to roll out there. If no other moves get made, you're probably looking at some sort of shared time at first base between Paredes and Christian Walker and maybe shared time at second base. What do you, if we don't see any moves, how do you think they handle this logjam?
Well, Altuve's days of playing over 150 games should be over. His age and the drop in his performance level. So if you keep Paredes, now I don't want him playing any second base, who plays those games? But Correa, he's not a 150-game player, even if he doesn't have an injury. I think you want to be sitting him some. Christian Walker turning 35, basically opening day, and off what he did in 2025. I mean, the only Astro that I would say I want in the lineup 150 times is Jeremy Peña. And obviously Yordan, if he's going to give them a healthy season. But Yordan, 150 games in one season, please. So it smacks a little bit of fantasy baseball. Oh, this guy could hit 20 home runs. This guy could hit 25 home runs. One, defense counts. They moved off Altuve off second base a year ago because the defense had deteriorated to about the worst in the game. He was a poor outfielder. That does not mean he's going to be better at second base if that becomes his primary position. So I have a little queasiness with the state of their infield, 35 and 36 years old on the right side, both guys coming off poor seasons. And Correa, I think the defense will be excellent, but I'm wary of the offense. And I see these mock lineups for the Astros. Peña 1, Alvarez 2, Altuve 3, Correa 4. Unless Altuve rejuvenates, he's not a good three-hole hitter at this point in his career. And Correa, for damn sure, isn't a cleanup hitter in a lineup that you're saying, that is elite.
That may be fair, but I'd rather have Correa up there in an RBI moment than Christian Walker. At least Correa will smack the ball to the right side of the field and knock a run in where Walker's just going to strike out at an eye-high fastball. So, I mean, as much as we'd like to see more from Correa, at least I trust him in a big moment to put bat on the ball and drive in a run. Maybe the pull side power isn't what it used to be, but at least he could drive in a run. Walker's going to swing at 2 pitches in the dirt, get to 0-2 count, and strike out a few pitches later. So he's the problem. They shouldn't have signed him last year. We said that. The whole Abreu thing. Why are you signing this older player at first base, a position that's really not that coveted, and they did it again? They still didn't learn from it. We're not even 1 year later. They already want to get rid of this guy, but they can't. This is their fault. The Correa thing, have whatever opinion you want about it, but they chose this Christian Walker thing before the season. They chose to give him 3 years, and within 1 year, they want him out of here, but nobody wants to take him.
Yeah, and it's not just about because I see everybody go like, well, if Paredes doesn't get hurt, that trade doesn't happen. That trade probably doesn't happen if Christian Walker is productive. Like, that's the other part of it, too, is if Christian Walker is a better hitter in 2025, they're probably not as desperate and looking to take on that money. Yep. So I think it's a confluence of bad decisions that have them in this situation right now. And
just remember that after the All-Star break, Walker was a better hitter than Altuve or Correa.
I mean, that bar is low.
Yes, and therein lies the rub.
Yeah, it really is the rub. Final rub before we jump out on this episode.
A week ago, in talking about the modern era committee and Bonds and Clemens likely not having a shot, and neither guy came close. They won't even be on the ballot in 2028 because they didn't get the required 5 votes out of 16. And I mentioned Jeff Kent is having a much more worthy case than the main ballot writers gave him in his 10 years on that ballot, but that he probably wouldn't get in. Well, lo and behold, the one guy elected and soon to be officially Baseball Hall of Famer or inducted over the summer, Jeff Kent. Now, he will go in a San Francisco Giant cap, I'm sure, not an Astros cap, but it is another Astros-connected player who had 2 good seasons here. And, you know, before the golden era arrived, to me, Jeff Kent produced the single loudest moment in the history of the ballpark. At bottom of the 9th, 0-0 game, 3-run homer in game 5 against the Cardinals. Yeah, they went and lost game 6 and 7 in St. Louis. But an indelible moment in Astros history produced by Jeff Kent, who over Dale Murphy and Don Mattingly and Gary Sheffield and Fernando Valenzuela and certainly Bonds and Clemens, it's Jeff Kent, a greater hitter than Craig Biggio, than Roberto Alomar, than Ryan Sandberg, who will soon be his contemporaries enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I think I'd like to commend Joe Espada because I think he's the only one that gets it, that after a record year of injuries and guys going on the injured list and pitchers and the Yordan again, he's finally the one that seems to be being conservative about this. Dana Brown's talking about Yordan out in left field, and Espada's like, we need to keep him healthy. He's our best hitter. Let's DH him to make sure we keep him healthy. I know that's not going to keep him from rolling his ankle, running around the bases, or hurting his knee, sliding into second, or coughing on some fireworks in Atlanta in the outfield, whatever. But it should protect him a little bit. So my point being is it's not just that. He also said that I'm not going to use Brian Abreu. I'm not going to use Josh Hader for 4 out innings early in the season. I'm going to take it easier on these guys. Espada's paying attention that we're putting too much workload on these guys and we're not being smart about this because he's the one that has to manage these guys. He's the one that has to fill up the lineup card when he's seeing, oh man, we don't have this guy. We don't have this guy. We don't have this guy. He's taking this seriously. So I hope him and Dana Brown can kind of see eye to eye on this because what they were doing last year was not working. And we saw with the head trainer that we talked about, they promoted, they didn't make any different change there. I would think that's a Dana Brown call, not a Joe Espada call for who's hiring the head trainers. I don't know that, but that would be my assumption. Dana Brown oversees the whole organization. And I like Dana, don't get me wrong. I just think we got to take this seriously. What you guys have been doing hasn't been working. Let's be a little more conservative, especially with guys like Yordan, Hader, guys that you've committed about $100 million to.
Amen to that. Charlie, circling back to your commentary on Jeff Kent, it's kind of a tragedy in sports that some of the biggest moments get lost when their teams go on to lose a series, like Jeff Kent's home run in the NLCS, Altuve's home run in Arlington against the Rangers in the ALCS, and if I can make a cross-sport reference, Eddie Johnson in the Western Conference Championship against the Jazz so many years ago. A great moment that just gets overshadowed by the Stockton shot. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up an old wound for Rockets fans out there.
That's too soon. 28 years later?
Yeah, it still hurts, baby. But my final thought is about a sign of the times. It was announced this week that the Astros sold their 3 minor league teams to Diamond Baseball Holdings, which is supported by private equity firm Silver Lake. DBH now owns 48 teams, or about 40% of all minor league teams. The current cap is 50 teams that can be owned by any one entity. And my guess is that we'll see a revision of that concurrently as the new CBA is being negotiated and structured to allow an entity like DBH to own more teams and to do what they look poised to do, which is to become the company for minor league baseball. Their stated purpose is obviously to streamline operations, but as is the case with most private equity firms, their real endeavor will be to maximize profits, minimize expenses, and grab as much real estate as they can. And it's too early to say whether this will be a positive change or not for baseball, but there are many examples of private equity wreaking havoc on companies and industries. And while that won't impact the average fan, it will likely have impacts on the people who actually work in those industries. So we cross our fingers and see what happens. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Reminder for Texans fans, be sure to subscribe to our other podcast, Texans on Tap. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. And as always, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.